The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private. Trust Ireland's leading private hospitals with locations nationwide, including Dublin, Cork and Limerick.
This is News Talk.
As cases across the continent steadily rise, governments announce more restrictive lockdown measures in an attempt to curb the spread. Now, to get the current picture over Europe, I'm joined now by Hugo McCafferty, Irish journalist based in Milan, Spain correspondent for The Independent, Graeme Keighley, freelance Berlin-based reporter Jessica Saltz, and journalist based in the Netherlands working for Dutch News, Gordon Darroch. We'll go first to Jessica. Jessica, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, Germany had been doing well. What's gone wrong and where are the problem areas?
Yes, well, the number of cases in Germany has started to rise exponentially as of the last couple of weeks. We're seeing new records broken almost every day. This morning, we were told that there's nearly 15,000 new cases that have been recorded across the country. But these are concentrated in hotspots. These tend to be the most populous areas. Here in Berlin, in the capital, is one of the hotspots. But apart from that, in cases in the east tend to be a lot lower, where there's less people living in less of the bigger cities. Whereas in the west, in Nordrhein-Westfalia, and also in the south, in Bayern, cases there rising pretty rapidly. And really, the local governments, as well as the government in Berlin, are really pointing the finger of blame quite squarely at citizens for becoming quite lax. As the leader of Bavaria said, now is the time for people to really start reducing the contact they have with other people. That now is the time that we really need to get a grip on this virus.
Now, we know that Germany is a federal state, therefore you have different state governments who'll do different things. Or is there an overarching instruction from Berlin?
Well, this is always what makes controlling this virus in Germany a bit difficult. It's what's made Germany sort of quite successful in managing the virus so far, because it was able to react very quickly, very locally. But it does make it difficult when Angela Merkel has to sort of lay down the law, which she's trying to do at the moment. But ultimately, it is up to the 16 regional leaders of each federal state to decide which measures to put in place. And they are going to be meeting today with Angela Merkel to discuss a new lockdown, which is unlikely to be national, although Merkel would like it to be. Because of course there are 16 different federal states. This is 16 different opinions, and opinions do vary very widely between these state leaders about what needs to be done. As I said, in the south and the west, we're already seeing localized lockdowns in the hotspots, and these leaders would like there to be stricter regulations put in place across the whole country. But of course, here in the east, certain regional leaders are saying, well, that's just not necessary.
You mentioned how patchy it is in some areas. It's not so bad. In other areas, it is soaring. Give us some examples of, for example, if I lived in Frankfurt, what restrictions would I live under currently? If I lived in Berlin, where would I not be allowed to go? What would I not be allowed to do? If I lived in Munich, in Bayern, in Bavaria, what would I be allowed to do?
It does differ widely across the country. At the moment, we're seeing the strictest lockdowns in two districts in Bavaria. Bavaria is seeing some of the worst cases of the coronavirus. And there are two districts in Bavaria which are under the strictest form of lockdown. This means everything's closed, all local businesses, schools, daycare centres, and people are restricted from moving around and living under strict curfews. In other parts of the country, it is more or less business as normal. Across the country, you still have to wear masks in public transport and in shops. Here in Berlin, we do have some sort of a curfew. Restaurants and bars have to stop serving alcohol after 11 p.m. between the hours of 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. But I can tell you, living in Berlin is pretty relaxed about the rules so far. You walk down the street on a Thursday or Friday evening and places tend to be a bit packed. The Berlin Senate trying to keep control of people and telling people they need to be a bit more vigilant. But here in the capital, known for being quite hedonistic, it's sort of often easier said than done.
Now, one of the features of Germany are the Christmas markets, which are due to start not too many weeks away. You know, we're talking here about having a lockdown in Ireland, what we call level 5, in order to save Christmas so that we can flatten the curve and get open again for business at the end of November, beginning of December. I mean, are Germans concerned about saving Christmas?
Absolutely. The Christmas markets here are understandably big business. I mean, some of these people live off the money that they make at Christmas markets for the whole year. They make their entire annual income at Christmas markets, some of the people who have stalls there. So understandably, the groups that represent the Christmas markets are already voicing huge concern, especially since local governments and indeed the government in Berlin is saying that there might even have to be limits on the amount of people that can gather publicly outdoors over the next few weeks. And in November is traditionally when Christmas markets open in lots of parts of the country. So Christmas market stall owners are hugely concerned about this. And of course, watching the developments of, in the western part of the country, in Nordrhein-Westphalia, Carnival begins in a couple of weeks' time on the 11th of November. I mean, in that part of the, for people who live in that part of the country, in Cologne and Bonn, it's actually a bigger deal than Christmas. And at Carnival, we've been told, has actually been stopped this year. It's not going to be happening on from the 11th of November. And this usually sees tens to hundreds of thousands of people going to that part of the country to celebrate. So certainly, I think a sour mood in certain parts of the country as celebrations are being being stopped.
Now, a number of issues which surface in every country. Testing and tracing, how good is it? Number one. And secondly, schools, both the kindergartens right through the gymnasium, right through to universities. What's happening in terms of education? What's open? What is not?
Well, as I said, in Bavaria, in these two regions, that's the only place currently in these two districts where schools have had to be closed. But in the rest of the country, school and daycare centres remain open, albeit under varying levels of restrictions. For example, in some parts of the country, students have to wear masks the whole day at school. And whereas in other parts of the country, for example, here in Berlin, they only have to wear masks going between classes. Some classrooms, some classing times have been staggered and so forth. But Angela Merkel, as I said, will be meeting with regional leaders today to discuss new lockdown measures. But it does seem to be a united priority for all regional leaders that schools and also daycare centres remain open, that school children can carry on their education seems to be one of the top priorities here.
Jessica, thank you very much for that update from Germany. That's Jessica Salz. We're going to Gordon Darroch in the Netherlands. Gordon, good morning.
Good morning.
I suppose the Netherlands had been fairly good up to relatively recent times. Then we started to get more reports of soaring numbers there. How bad has it become?
It's got pretty serious. So we saw the numbers start to rise actually in the late summer, in about August, and then it leveled off. And then since September, it's been rising pretty rapidly. And back in June, we were down to around about less than 50 infections per day. Now, in the last couple of days, we've got over 10,000. And bear in mind, that's in a country of 17 million people. So it's very high numbers. It's been rising rapidly. And the government's responded by introducing a partial lockdown at the beginning of last week. That means all bars, restaurants and cafes are all shut. You can't serve alcohol. You can't sell alcohol in the shop after 8 o'clock. And people are being advised to work from home. That seems to have had some effect. The increase is less rapid, but we're still seeing about 20-25% more cases week on week. So it is slowing down, but the numbers have got very high.
And schools, what have they decided about schools and universities?
So far, schools have stayed open. That's primary and secondary schools. Because in the first lockdown, all the schools were shut. There are children now being asked to wear masks in school corridors, but not in the classroom. But they're doing their best to keep the schools open. And the universities as well, they are mostly now teaching online now. That there is some, there are no classes at university, but students can still go in and out to meet their tutors. But they're doing their best to try and keep education running.
Now, I presume that the logic of students wearing masks in the corridors and when they're moving from place to place is simply that if an infection occurs within the classroom, they will simply test all of those kids in that unit or send them all home or whatever it might be. But they don't have to go through the whole school because they will presume that mask wearing in common areas will prevent infection.
That's basically it. As I say, they're trying to keep the disruption to the schools as a minimum. There is a rule as well that you have to maintain social distancing from your teacher, but not between the children in the classroom, to try and stop the virus transmitting between classes or from pupils to their teachers. There have been quite high infection rates in schools, and certainly within the school age populations. There's been quite a lot of discussion about whether the schools can stay open. But so far the government has not said closing schools is on the agenda. They want to see if the current restrictions that they introduced last week are working first.
Now, hospitals, how close to capacity are they?
They are some hospitals are pretty close to capacity. In fact, a hospital the day before yesterday, so on Monday, said it was shutting or it was not admitting new corona patients for 24 hours. This is a hospital in Dordrecht, which is about 30 miles outside of Rotterdam, because they said that the beds were full. And it wasn't so much the beds were full, but they didn't have enough staff they're up to the maximum capacity of staff that they had, because 70 of their employees are also off because they've tested positive for corona. So even though if they have enough beds, they don't have enough nursing staff to actually care for the patients. And they said, although this goes right against what we stand for, the reason that we exist as a hospital, we cannot guarantee the quality of care for the patients we have if we take any more in. So they're very close to capacity. There has been something they introduced in the first lockdown, which is a national patient distribution system, so that if there's not enough beds at your local hospital, they'll then find a bed at another hospital. But that could be an hour and a half drive away in an ambulance when you're very sick. So it's pretty, and that is starting to happen. And the other thing that's starting to happen is that something that they also had in the first lockdown, which is that patients are being taken over the border to Germany. Now, the first patients at the end of last week were transferred from Almere, which is just outside Amsterdam, across the border into hospitals in Western Germany. But of course, as Jessica just said, that's a part of Germany that's got some of the highest infection rates. Mm-hmm. So at some point, there is the danger that both countries max out their capacity and then there's nowhere to go.
And there was talk of Belgian patients being exported to the Netherlands. But of course, if the Netherlands is having a problem with capacity, that can't happen either. So I presume the Belgians, too, will be looking to Germany for capacity.
I think they have to, because at the current, as things stand at the moment, hospital admissions are rising quite quickly. We're also seeing the intensive care capacity. I think about now there are about just over 500 patients in intensive care. Now, they increased the number of available beds up to around 1,300 during the first lockdown, but that means that they're almost half full, and they're expecting that number to keep rising for at least another 3 or 4 weeks. So I don't think any patients are coming in from Belgium anytime soon.
Now, finally, Gordon, how is discipline, how is compliance among the population to the restrictions?
Well, certainly in the first lockdown, there was pretty good compliance. I think people are very observant of the rules. They felt the sense of urgency. Over the summer, there was a sense that the virus had kind of gone away because the lockdown had worked very well and the number of infections were right down and people had started to travel again and everything had opened up. And so when the reopening, which is a very gradual process, stage managed, finished at the start of September, that was around about the time the infections were starting to rise again. And I think it took a long time for people to grasp the fact that we were getting back towards the kind of levels we were getting in the spring. So there is definitely less discipline now, I think. There was a big, huge debate about wearing masks. This is one of the last countries in Europe to make mask wearing compulsory. And even now in shops, by no means everybody is wearing a face mask. And there's certainly been a lot more resistance in this second lockdown to the whole idea of shutting down the economy. People saying that, arguing that either the virus is not as bad as the government's making out, or there's too much panic, or that it's old people who die mainly, and that's not worth shutting down the economy for. I think those voices are much louder this time round than they were in the first lockdown.
And are there fines, by the way, for bad behaviour?
Yes, there are fines. And again, this is something that they've tightened up on in the last couple of weeks. Over the summer, almost no fines are issued, and that's largely because there wasn't any real sense of urgency. So in the last couple of weeks, again, since the partial lockdown was introduced, they've started to bring fines back in. There are fines for not wearing a mask. You'll find As well, obviously, if you don't observe social distancing, but the preference has been throughout so that the police, or either the police or the community wardens who enforce this, will first speak to you. They won't automatically slap you with a fine. They'll first just go over to you and say, "Can you please stick to the rules?" And only if you refuse or put up a fuss, then you'll get a fine. And the fine was brought down. Actually, it was originally about €400. For every infringement, but it's been reduced to €90. And that was partly because the justice minister had his wedding 2 months ago at the end of the beginning of September. And he was photographed not observing social distancing, hugging his mother. There was all kinds of or mother-in-law, I should say. There were all kinds of a row about that. And he was eventually given a fine. But that's contributed certainly to people sort of feeling that if the justice minister isn't observing the rules, then why should I? And that's made it more difficult for the government and people to maintain to maintain discipline.
Well, our listeners will understand the parallels with a scandal here we called Golfgate, where we lost our European commissioner because of his attendance at a golf dinner. So politics is the same everywhere. Gordon Darroch in the Netherlands, thank you very much for joining us on News Talk. Now we're going to Graeme Keighley, who's Spain correspondent for The Independent. Graeme, good morning.
Good morning.
Spain is a huge country. I think I mentioned to you before, perhaps, that one of my friends lives in an obscure part of Spain. He's the same distance from Madrid as he is from Dublin, living there. And he feels that, you know, there's no COVID around him. But how widespread is COVID-19 throughout the Spanish countryside?
Well, you should know that last week Spain became the first Western country, Western European country rather, to pass the 1 million mark in terms of infections. Yesterday there were 18,000 new infections, and the death rate is over 35,000. They say that actually infections in the countryside are more widespread even than the cities, because people seem to lower their guard, thinking, as your friend perhaps does, that people can meet up and there won't be so many police around monitoring the situation. But of course, the same dangers exist anywhere, in the countryside, cities, whatever.
Now, again, it's local government, isn't it, that is designing and enforcing the regulations, so they may differ from city to city, from countryside to urban area and so on. So what sort of restrictions are in place and where? I mean, in Madrid, for example, does life proceed as normal or otherwise?
Well, right now, Madrid and two other regions next to Madrid, to the south and to the north, are deciding whether they're going to essentially lock off these regions at the weekend. Well, the weekend's going to be usually a big kind of long weekend for Halloween, for All Saints Day, when lots of people meet their families. But what's going to happen is they're essentially going to say, look, you can't come in or go out of Madrid unless you've got a really good reason, for work or for medical reasons. And that will extend beyond the capital, out to the north, a vast region called Castilla-León, and down to the south, Castilla-La Mancha. Other restrictions are possibly planned in Catalonia, up in the northwest, in the northeast, and also they're introducing micro lockdowns in little areas of Catalonia, small towns where the infection level is very high indeed, and they're saying you can't go in or out of these areas.
Are there fines, and are they imposed widely, or are they there as a deterrent?
There are fines. They vary from €60 to €600,000. The highest fines are usually for establishments like restaurants or bars, which flout the regulations. And I spoke to a man the other day who had incurred fines of €60,000 because he has opened his bar and had not enforced the restrictions two nights running. The restrictions being that he must close at 10 o'clock at night. This was near Barcelona. He said, look, if I carry on like this, I'll be out of business. So I have to keep open at least for another hour. Otherwise, there's no money to be made. Restaurants don't really make money serving at lunchtime, you see. So there are people flouting this, some intentionally, some organising parties for people to come and pay. There was a party, for instance, down in a castle down south of Barcelona at last weekend. So you see some of these things are family get-togethers and others are well organised.
And finally, Graham, do people have a sense of why Spain has been so badly hit compared to some of the neighbours?
Yes, they do. The experts say that essentially Spain had a very strict lockdown, but it opened up too quickly. It opened up too quickly because it wasn't ready with track and trace teams throughout the country. And also the country is different from others in that it has a very gregarious culture of meeting up with families. It also, in the main cities like Madrid and Barcelona, people are densely populated in small flats, not like in houses, perhaps in Ireland and other places. So a lot of people are squeezed in together and it's easier to pass on the virus at certain times. One other factor is that during the summer, there was a population of itinerant migrants moving around the country, picking harvests of pears and apples and other fruit. These people weren't housed very well by local authorities, and the virus was passed on quite easily and spread throughout the country. So some factors explaining why Spain's infection levels are much higher.
Graham Keighley, Spain correspondent for The Independent, thank you very much for joining us on News Talk. And finally, we go to Hugo McCafferty, Irish journalist based in Italy. Hugo, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
We had thought Italy was doing so well. The lessons had been learned from the experience in Lombardy at the beginning when literally there was no room in the morgues, never mind in the hospitals. As such was the death toll. What's gone wrong in Italy?
Yeah, well, they're currently reporting very high numbers, 22,000 cases yesterday, which is a record amount of cases in a single day. But I suppose that there's a caveat there in that record numbers of tests have been carried out as well. So what has gone wrong? We don't know exactly. Italy had been doing very well in respect to other European countries. Everybody was observing the health protocols, everybody wearing masks. And if you look at the data, this current surge in numbers corresponds almost exactly with the opening of the schools. However, experts are telling us that schools are not a focal point for transmission, and they seem to be determined to keep
schools open. They tell us that here too, Hugo, and yet we've had the surge in Ireland at a time when, you know, it's complicated. We opened up the wet pubs, we watched college students go back to universities, and we watched school students go back to school all around the same time. So it's hard to decipher what causes the spread. And then you had people nipping off on holidays to Spain, Italy, France and so on, and coming back perhaps infected and not knowing it.
Yeah, it's a very it's a complicated question, but it seems to be that the young people socializing and bars and restaurants are being made out as the main culprits for the current surge in numbers. So Conte, Prime Minister Conte, announced a new emergency decree on Monday, which was that all bars and restaurants will have to close at 6, gyms, swimming pools, theatres and cinemas will have to close as well. And this caused a little bit of consternation amongst the many people who work in that sector because, you know, they just want to work at this point. And they don't necessarily see that a bar or a restaurant is more dangerous than a school.
Mm. And they are talking about doing this to, quote unquote, save Christmas, as we are talking about that here in Ireland. I mean, are people not listening to that message and not realising that if things keep on soaring as they are, that there will be no effective Christmas?
Yeah, I mean, he has mentioned and said that, you know, we can have a beautiful Christmas, he says, if we adhere to the restrictions now. I think the more important than Christmas here would be avoiding a national lockdown of the same extent as last time. Now, there were some disturbances in various cities around Italy. You might have seen the pictures, protests. But honestly, really, they were just a lot of them were peaceful protests that were hijacked by far-right elements, football hooligans and neo-fascists, a few hundred people running amok in the piazzas. But you saw that the police were well prepared for them and able to disperse the crowd easily. And I suppose it should be, we should remind people that Italy is quite like France. It's a country that likes the protest. And yes, there are a few thugs out there, but I suppose it's to be expected. Most people
are... So keep it in perspective. You mentioned football hooligans. Are there fans allowed into any sporting events?
No, football is going ahead, but the stadiums are closed, so it's all behind closed doors. Gyms and contact sports, all recreational sports, are banned at the moment. We haven't had a decision on skiing yet. There are some ski slopes still open up in the north, but once the season really opens, we'll just have to see where we are with numbers, you know, and see how we go then.
All right, it's a strange situation. Europe doing so well, and then everything flipped again. We're ahead of the United States, obviously, but their numbers are soaring, and they're predicting massive numbers by this day next week, when we'll be counting the votes in the presidential election. So the world is definitely, as Sean O'Casey would have it, in the state of chassis. Hugo McCafferty in Italy, thank you very much for joining us on News Talk.